Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller. Really pleased to have back Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Home Horticulture Educator. She's with us to talk about, well, what's going on in the outdoors. Maybe it's in the garden, maybe it's on your lawn, maybe it's with your trees. Tell you what, she's got the answers. And you get those answers by calling us at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Either way, we'd be happy to hear from you. Lisa, welcome back.
Thanks very much.
Really pleased to have you back. What kinds of questions and things are coming into your office these days?
Well, all kinds of things.
Everything
we're imaginable. You know, putting the garden to bed for the winter. Mm-hmm. When can I harvest this or that? Mm-hmm. Haven't had any emerald ash borer calls. That's a good thing.
Yeah, that is a very good thing. Although I see now that we have. I'm looking here. I've got some papers in front of me here. A confirmation of emerald ash borer in Oak Creek in Milwaukee County.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yep.
So it's pretty much going to...
It's getting here if it isn't here already.
It's in many parts of our listening area and probably, unfortunately, will be in many more parts before it's all over with.
Yeah.
Well, not much to talk about for that right now. Let's turn to Dalton in Mozanie has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Dalton. Thanks a lot for calling.
Hello. We have a garden and a few carrots in it. We were wondering about when would be the best time to pick it and what time would it, like, spoil?
Okay, so once you pick it or once you harvest those, how long before they'll actually spoil? Lisa?
Okay, carrots, you can, because they're a root crop, you can hold off harvesting them for a while by putting hay or straw on the top of them at least like 10 inches.
Now, yeah, we put leaves on them.
You did? Okay, well, that's good. I mean, you can harvest them any time now, but if you want to extend that harvest a little bit for, you know, maybe into December yet, do keep those leaves really thick on top of the carrots. And when you harvest the carrots, make sure that you wash all the dirt off and dry them off real well before you put them in the refrigerator. And carrots do tend to get a little bit dried out if you have them in the refrigerator without any kind of covering, like a plastic bag with some holes in it. You can usually keep those in your refrigerator, though, for 3 weeks or so, and they should be fine.
And they could always, if you have a little freezer room after that or before you mm-hmm. get to that far, you could actually freeze those carrots too, couldn't you?
Yep.
So there you have it, Dalton. Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Appreciate your call. And we turn to Don in Pittsville. Hi, Don. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I was wondering about pruning apple trees. What is the best ideal time to do it? I would have time to prune them now. Would it be best to prune them in fall, or would it be best to wait till late winter and spring?
You should make sure that when you're pruning them that they're completely dormant. They're not completely dormant at this time of year, so you want to wait until preferably January or February. You can prune them into early March, too, and I tend to like to do that because then sometimes the snow has gone down a little bit. But that's the time to do it. And we have a great publication on our Learning Store site, website, for pruning apple trees. The site was down last week and this week, so you may have to wait for it a little while, but on the other hand, you're not pruning quite yet.
Yeah, you're not pruning yet. So, and what's the, I forget the Learning Store.
.uwex.edu.
I got another question. Is it just important to prune plum trees and pear trees as is apple trees?
Yes, it is. The pear trees, however, there are a couple different techniques that you use. With the apple trees, you're trying to create, there are some similarities too. And again, we do have another publication on growing pears that has a pruning section. But there's an open center type of pruning technique that you use with pears, whereas you're trying to get more of a shell of production with the apple trees.
So there is a difference, and
yeah.
It pays to take a look online at those publications.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks, okay. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Don. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. That's the number to call. Let's go to Holly in Appleton. Hi, Holly.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I just have a question about my green peppers. I'm a brand-new gardener. I just started this year, and I did a look down the extension. I did the square-foot gardening.
Ah.
And I put the green peppers in, and I got a lot of green peppers, but they were all small. They turned green, and then they turned black.
Ooh, that doesn't sound good.
Really tiny.
Okay. Where are you from again?
Appleton.
Appleton. Okay, so you're north here of the Madison area. When did you plant them?
Oh, probably early May.
Okay, that's good. Well, we had a particularly cold summer this year, and the tomatoes and the peppers were not the happiest of campers. So some people had problems with that that might explain the small fruits. Also, they do like some fertilizer, and they do like at least 6 hours of full sun. If you were harvesting them after a frost, that could explain why they turned black on you.
No, this was early. Oh, yeah.
I have a feeling it has to do with the cold, wet weather.
Okay.
It could, yeah. They might have gotten some kind of infection. Did you break them off, or did you cut them with a pruning shears that you'd used for something else?
I just broke them off.
You just broke them off. Okay. Well, then you didn't transmit anything.
It seemed kind of early for me. To my way of thinking, I always thought peppers should be planted a little bit later because of cold conditions that can come up. And if you said early May.
Yeah, early May.
I would have said end of May or June.
Well, here in Madison, the supposed last frost date, I always say that with a grain of salt, is May 20th, and that's when you can bring out your tomatoes and your peppers, but it's probably best if you wait a little while. But a lot of people put them out and then use various covers and so on to protect them in case we get a frost. You can start them inside early. That's fine. But
my first couple turned out normal. That's the weird part. It didn't happen till later. I got one or two normal ones, and then they did the small black thing.
Did any of them turn black on the plant?
Yes.
Okay. Something's going on there then. I can't say for sure what it is, but it sounds like a disease.
Brian Huddleston might have been, our plant doctor might have been able to take a look. If this happens again, one of the things you could even shoot him an email, Brian Huddleston, and describe what you had, or if you see it again, if you took a picture of it and shot it to his website or to his email, he might be able to diagnose it just by taking a look at it because he sees a lot.
a lot. That one's weird. Did you? I wouldn't save any seeds from these peppers, and I generally wouldn't save seeds from them. Either.
Anyway, so the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison, if you type that in, you might be able to send an email to Brian Huddleston, and he might have an answer for you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Cheryl in Superior, on to you now. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. My 4-year-old and I had an apple from the apple tree yesterday, and he became interested in growing all the seeds from the apples that we ate. So the question is, how do we go about growing apple trees from apple seeds from our apple tree?
Oh. Okay, well, the first thing that I need to tell you is that you're going to... It would take a really long time for you to actually get any apples. It takes... from seed, it's probably going to be, several years.
You'll be through college.
Yeah. and you're also likely to get a variety of different kinds of fruits that probably won't look like or taste like the apple that you have. The apple that you have is probably grafted. And do you know what kind it is?
Nothing.
Okay.
It was there when we got there.
So just to let you know that when you're growing apples from seeds, you get because of pollination issues and the genetics getting mixed up, you get all kinds of different progeny that'll be different. What I would do is I would check with your county extension office and see. I'm trying to remember what the protocols are for.
I think they need a. Do they
seeds.
Need a cold spell?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, but I don't remember how long it is. You might be able to put them in a bag of moist sand in your refrigerator, you know, for several months. But I'm not positive how long that is.
So could we even just plant a few seeds in specific spots out in the yard and just see
sure.
what happens over
yeah.
winter?
Oh,
even?
You could certainly
oh, sure.
do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Can we even get them to sprout right now just so he can see the sprouting process from the seed? Would that happen?
Well, again, they need a cold period in order to germinate. So if you put some in like a Ziploc with some wet sand in your refrigerator for a few months, most
okay.
apples are going to need, boy, for flowering, they generally need 800 plus cold degrees at 32 or below. But you don't want to let them freeze necessarily. So I would try that for about 3 months and see if you can get those to go.
They do need a dry. They do need a dry out period and a stratification period. And if you skip those two steps, you're probably not going to get apples.
Yeah.
So we need to dry the seeds for a tiny bit before we put them in the sand in the plastic baggie in the refrigerator.
Probably not, I would think, because if it, you know, the way the plant is set up, if the apple falls to the ground, it rots, the seeds may go through the gut of an animal, but they do need to have a cold period so that they germinate.
Okay, so we just need a cold period. Okay, so mm-hmm. we can do that, and then we can do something else just to show the sprouting thing
sure.
right now. So, okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question for Lisa. Let's turn to Kathy in Oshkosh. Kathy, hi to you.
Hi to you, and thank you for this opportunity. My friend has it's either a fiscus or a fig tree she brought in. It was doing beautifully outside, and she put it in a shady spot, and the leaves started dropping. So she moved it to a sunny spot, but it continues to look bad and drop its leaves. Can you help?
Okay, yes. That is a ficus. That's the Latin name for a weeping fig. And I always say they're called weeping figs because they do drop their leaves.
Yes, they do.
All the time, all over the floor. We have a big one in our atrium at work, and the custodian is always having to sweep up after the thing. They are kind of prima donna-like in nature. Unfortunately, if they're near a door where they get a draft, they'll drop leaves. If you use new paint around them, they'll drop leaves. What also might have happened while the fig was outside is it might have gotten some sucking insects on it, like scales or spider mites or something like that. What she should do is look real carefully underneath the leaves and on the twigs. If there's anything sticky, then chances are that she has something, some kind of sucking insect on it. And you can use insecticidal soap. Probably you'll need to. For most of those products, it'll kill the adults but not the eggs. So you need to spray once and then 7 days later spray again. You can try blasting them off with a spray of water as well. Also, I want to check when she had it outside, was it sitting in a saucer that filled up every time it rained?
That I'm not sure.
Okay.
But she was pretty fussy about it. I mean, she looked for insects and
okay.
and parasites.
Well, I know our ficus dropped its leaves like crazy every time we brought it in. I finally got rid of that ficus. We had it outside, and it would do great. And then
yeah.
when you bring it in, then the leaves immediately started dropping. And it came back about halfway through the winter. It's started to sort of come around, and then it was leafed out again by the time we got it back outside.
What did you cut it back?
No.
No, you shouldn't, okay. Unless okay. There's a lot of, like, dead branches or something.
Yeah, you cut dead, but...
What happens is that when the plant is outside, it adapts itself to the outside conditions. You don't want to put it outside right away in full sun, because just a pane of glass will take away 25% of the sunlight. And so it's like, you know, if you were to put yourself right outside without any sunscreen after being inside all winter, you'd burn too.
Yep.
And so your friend was right to acclimate it by putting it outside in shade first, moving it into sun. But then the reverse happens when you bring it back inside for the winter. Suddenly this tree that had been getting, you know, full luxurious sunlight is brought inside where it's much darker, and it says, whoa, I can't support all these leaves. I'm going to have to drop some of them. And of course it does. And so your plant does look kind of threadbare for a little while, but it should pick up again. You could try a little bit of nitrogen fertilizer. I usually don't recommend doing that in the fall, but if it is not producing any leaves, you need to stimulate it a little bit.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Home Horticulture Educator, our guest here. Jim Packard, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here on Garden Talk, we visit with Lisa Johnson, and we hope to visit with you, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Tom in Peshtigo next. Tom, hello.
Hello, Lisa. How are you doing today? Got a question. I've got some apple trees. They're about 5 years old since I planted them. They've been producing some fruit, but the question I have is that when is the proper time of the year to prune those, and then how much can you cut those back? They've kind of like favored growing towards the sun because it's a narrow lot that I live on.
Yeah.
And I just kind of like, I don't know if there's a way that you can train them or, you know, and how aggressive can you be as far as pruning?
Well, you shouldn't prune any more than 25% off at any one time. And considering these are young trees, are they standard trees or are they dwarf?
I think there's a few, two or three of them are the dwarf, and then there's one that looks like it might be more of a traditional apple tree. It's a much larger tree, the
okay.
one.
Because the standards tend to take at least 5 years to start bearing well. You get more precocious bearing, earlier bearing with the semi-dwarf or the dwarf plants. And if you do have a real narrow space, you might think about growing more semi-dwarf or dwarf plants in the future. The best time to prune them is, I like to do it in early March, but you can do it in February as well. You just want to make sure that the plants are completely dormant at the time that you do the pruning. And we do have a publication on pruning apple trees at our Learning Store site. It may still be down, but since you don't have to do it till February, you have a chance to wait till it comes back up. But it's a great publication, gives you illustrations and everything.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. UW Extension Learning Store, that's got lots of publications there.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of them. Steve in Kewaunee, on to you. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks, Larry and Lisa. I've got a dying English walnut, and I don't know, it's pretty old. And most of it's down, and I'm probably going to take the rest of it down this year. Can I put a locust, which is growing 15 feet from it, in its place? This locust is about 1 inch in diameter at the base and about 6 feet tall.
A honey locust?
Well, I don't know. It's got the big stickers on it. It might be.
Yeah, it could be.
Are you sure you want to do that?
Yeah.
Well, it's the right place for a tree.
but
the locust is a volunteer.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. If it's black locust, that tree is somewhat invasive. If it's a honey locust, on the other hand, and there are some that are still thorned honey locusts, but I wouldn't expect you to be able to find any in the trade. They sell only the thornless varieties now. I'd really recommend a different tree than either one of those.
Oh.
Yeah, you'd be a lot better off. You'd be a lot better off with another tree. And what could you recommend? You probably want something that's
a shade tree.
A shade tree, and maybe something a little fast growing. I think I sort of detect that, Steve.
The locusts are growing on the bank of the Lake Michigan, and they hold the soil really good. And this is like 100 feet from the bank.
Okay.
I mean, these might be the weed variety.
Yeah.
Because they're out there, and they're great trees to look at.
Yeah, they are, but they're weak-wooded and invasive, and we usually don't recommend those.
Mm-hmm.
I'd recommend something more like a Freeman maple, which is a hybrid between a red maple and silver maple and a red maple. And it has the harder wood of the red maple and good fall color, but faster growth rate of the silver maple. And there are a number of cultivars out there on the market.
Okay.
That I think that would be a really good option for that spot because they also will take a little bit moister soils.
Sure. Can I ask another question? The maples, they get the black spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard on these shows that you eliminate all of the leaves to take care of that.
Well, what you do is when they fall off the tree, you remove the leaves.
Right.
There are a couple different...
And these are on the tree lawn in the streets. And we got the city to come and suck all the leaves up. So they're gone. So that should help, right?
It should, but if we have another cool, moist spring, you'll probably have the problem
again. Can I mulch those leaves in the backyard?
No. Not if you want to...
how far away do you have to be?
Oh, quite a ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't leave those around.
We're talking like 300 or 400 feet with a house in between?
Well, you could try that. It's just that it's usually not recommended to keep diseased material around because the spores are so small.
Sure.
But if you're composting it, that's one thing. And if it's a good hot compost pile, then you might potentially get rid of the disease.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. And Julie in Burlington, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Julie.
Hi. How are you guys today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I have a question about a boxwood hedge that I have. I bought a property here in Burlington about 5 years ago, and there is a really beautiful hedge around the front and along the side of the house. It's about 4 feet high. I have not pruned it, and I'm a little worried. I've had some sections that have died out. They've yellowed, and I've trimmed them out, and I notice that now they're browning, and that might be natural for boxwood in the fall. Is that correct?
No. Unfortunately, those are what we call broad-leafed evergreens, and they should remain green over the winter.
Okay.
Did you water them during periods of drought?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good for you.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful hedge. I don't want to lose it.
Yeah. Does it get a lot of winter sun? It's possible that...
It does. It may be scorched.
Okay. That can happen, especially if the plants are dry going into the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So I always advise people with evergreen conifers of any kind, needled conifers or broadleaf plants like rhododendron or boxwood or whatever, that they should keep those watered even into the beginning of November in order to make sure that the leaves are well hydrated and that when we get those January thaw sorts of periods where the air is warm and those plants start to try and photosynthesize and respire and give off water, that we are still able to have them do that and not get burned so badly. You know, the ground is still frozen, so they can't bring up anything from the ground, and the leaves try and give off water, and it's a bad thing. So that's why we try and keep certain marginally hardy things like the boxwood out of sunny, windy spots in the winter. Some people put burlap over them.
And are those bound down to the to the base, or are they laid over the top and fastened?
You can lay them over the top. You can also, some people will take stakes and build like a little teepee around the plant. That's probably your best option. I mean, if we get heavy snow, of course, you don't want it to be laying on top of the burlap for too long. So you might need to dust those off if we get, you know, 6 inches at one time, especially wet, heavy snow.
And then another question, when do you prune those? I have some newly established ones that I put in myself, and I have been pruning those early in the spring.
Yeah, that's when I would do it.
Okay, and, you know, how early can that be done?
You know, I would wait until April or so, because sometimes winter kill doesn't show right away. And if you're pruning them down just for height, you might end up with less of a plant than you planned on.
And then how far will those things regenerate? Can they be cut back a quarter as well? And do they sprout on old wood, or are they like some of those arborvitae that are...
They'll take shearing. They're like an arborvitae that has a, you know, kind of a brown zone underneath. I'm not sure I'd go as far as 25% because boxwoods are pretty slow growers. You might only get 3 inches during the year, so you need to be a little careful with that.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jim and Lisa.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, with your questions. Larry Miller here with my guest, Lisa Johnson, at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, too, at talk@WPR.org. Let's turn to Peter in Hayward next. Hello, Peter.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I've got a question about grapevines.
Okay.
How to deal with grapevines for the winter. These are Concord grapes.
Concord grapes, and you're in Hayward, so you're pretty far north.
Ooh,
right,
boy.
Yes, very far north.
Do you get a good harvest from those?
Well, this is the first year we just put them in.
Okay.
This past year.
Okay, factoring in Hayward. Here in the Madison area, we generally tend to do our pruning in March. So not really sure when you would do your pruning up there in Hayward. When did you plant them this year?
It was towards the end of summer.
Okay. You know, I'm going to refer you to our publication on growing grapes in Wisconsin.
Got a really good publication.
Yeah, it's many, many pages, and it has, you know, diseases, and it has how to prune them, how to trellis them. I know it has a section on Concord grapes, and I think it has a chart or a map of when you should do the pruning, depending on where you are in the state. I just can't remember right now what it is for the north.
So it's the Learning Store.
.uwex.edu. I'm hoping that the site is up because it was down earlier in the week. But in any case, I think you have a good long time to wait before you're going to need to find that out. Maybe Larry can check for me and see if that that website is up.
Okay. Well, thanks for your help.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Paul in Minnesota now. Paul, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Yes, I was wondering how to save the seeds out of our pumpkins to replant them next year.
Oh, you know, I wouldn't really recommend that because you're likely to get all kinds of different strange cucurbits that may or may not look like pumpkins. For squash, for example, Karen Delahoe used to tell my master gardeners it takes at least 12 visits from a bee per blossom to be able to have a proper pumpkin form. And you're getting pollination from who knows what. So she said always with cucurbits, and pumpkin falls into that category, that you don't really want to save the seeds.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Now, I like to eat them myself.
Me too. Yeah.
Put them on a pan.
A little butter and salt.
Yeah. I put them on a pan, spread them out, put them in the oven, and I just add a little salt to them. And A little butter and salt. They're great. I love them. Lana in Stone Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Lana.
Hi. I've got a couple of rose bushes that were my grandmother's, and one's a rambling and one is the old world bush. I was wondering when the best time to transplant them would be.
Early spring.
Okay, early spring. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm glad I waited then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fall is not a good time. And what I would do is, you know, check to see what is what's still alive on them after winter. And you can do your transplanting in early April. That's even end of March, depending on where you are and what the weather's like.
But you're a little further north.
Yeah.
So.
Might yeah. have to be April, even mid-April.
Mid-April.
Or June. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Lana. Mary in Madison, turning to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hello. I was wondering, I have a couple of apple trees in my backyard, and I'd like to eliminate the grass underneath them, and was wondering if you have a suggestion on what I can plant underneath.
And what do you? Why do you want to eliminate the grass underneath?
Because I don't want to cut it anymore. It just takes much more of my time than I...
And you want.
Right,
sure.
Right, yep.
Well, the best thing for the tree would actually be just mulch and not growing anything under it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our shade trees and so on that we don't depend on to produce a lot of fruit,
right.
They can handle hostas and wildflowers and bedding plants, you know, with no problem. But the fruit trees that we want for production really do best with just mulch.
Okay, so maybe just put a border around.
Yeah, you could do
further
that.
And further out. Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. And when you do put on that mulch, it should be about 3 inches deep, and you don't want it up against the trunk.
Correct. Okay.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. See, so often I have that mulch right up against the trunk.
I know.
Just drives me crazy.
Yeah, and I see it out in the landscape
all the time.
I'm driving around. It makes me want to carry a shovel and leap out of the car and go in
the same way. Drives me nuts.
Me too.
Jeanette in Rice Lake, we're on to you now. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I would like to know what we do with our chrysanthemums this fall. Do we cut them back? Do we mulch them? Do we...
Sure.
Or do we do it all in spring?
Okay. Usually what they're recommending with chrysanthemums, now are these real tall ones or are they relatively short?
They're the tall ones.
Okay. That you leave about a foot of stem on them to help protect them during the winter. So you could, if they're really tall, you can cut them back to about a foot tall. And then you wait until spring when you start to see some green growth coming up and after frost to cut them back.
Cut them all the way.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you for calling. And we finally have some open lines again at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your question. Tom in Duluth, you're next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have a possible answer. If her plant was a hibiscus, I have two on my front deck that I carry in and out every year, and every time I move them, they drop all their leaves and grow new ones for the new light situation.
Yep. That's very common for any house plants that are... given that little summer vacation outside. And, you know, it is recommended that you put your hibiscus outside for the summer. So that's a good thing. And, yeah, you can just expect that to happen pretty much every year when you bring them back inside.
Now, my question is, for pruning them back, it seems that they only flower on new growth. And
yeah,
what is happening is I think I'm pruning them too late because I'm not getting any flowers until, like, August. So do you have a good time of year to start doing that pruning back inside the house and then so they get good when I move them outside and start to flower?
Well, you don't need to prune them real hard, but you can do it in April or May. That's when we've done it at our building. We have a number of hibiscus plants. And, you know, we just cut them back a little bit mostly for shaping.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to keep them nice and dense, but not real hard.
Okay. That's my answer. Thank
all
you.
Right. Thank you for calling. Bob in Lancaster, on to you. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Well, we've got three full-size 20-year-old apple trees, and we had a terrific year. They were very productive, and all the branches, and we're just pleased. But a question arises, do we have to worry about them being too productive and, you know, bearing too much weight and causing a branch to collapse and so on? I mean,
you're probably not going to get that same result next year.
Depending on the variety, there are some apple trees that are called biennial bearers, that they have a very heavy crop one year, and then the next year it's very scarce. And what you can do to kind of even that out is thinning and your pruning routine as well. For the thinning, you don't want any apples more than, if you have a cluster, you don't want the spurs to be more than, well, closer than 5 inches apart. They say you can put your fist in between the two spurs. And for the clusters, you don't want more than a couple of apples per cluster. And again, that publication on at the Learning Store is really good. It covers when to do the thinning and how to do the thinning and so on. And thinning is important, especially with those biennial bearer trees, because you're right, you can get them to bear too heavily. Now, with an older tree like you've got, it's not so much of a danger, but with the younger trees, yeah, you can bend and break branches if the thinning isn't done properly.
Okay, but don't. It's not a case of pruning the branches.
Well, you should prune for proper sunlight penetration and proper form, so that you get sunlight penetration. And again, all that is covered in that publication. There's a whole regimen of pruning. You know, taking out suckers, taking out old spurs, and all kinds of things that it would take me about an hour to cover.
Okay.
And you can get that. I just went online to the Learning Store, and it's still down. The site's still down. But just write that, make a note of that. UW Extension Learning Store. It's learningstore.uwex.edu.
All righty. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Josh from Kenosha wondered, could those black peppers have been purple peppers?
Well, they might have been somewhat green to begin with. I've seen purple peppers be sort of green. I didn't ask her if they were squishy. That would have been a good question to ask. I suppose it's possible.
If there was a disease connected with those peppers, Josh wonders, would they have been safe to eat?
I wouldn't eat them if they're black. They probably wouldn't taste very good either.
No, I don't think they taste very good either. Dan in Wausau, we're on to you now. Hi, Dan.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Quick question about celery. I planted some celery this summer, and it produced fairly well. Two questions. Number one, is it okay to leave it weather over the winter outside? Or if I do move it inside, another question I have is, how do you get the celery to quit turning white? It's just, do you have to plant it in a shady area or what? I'm
usually they'll turn white due to lack of light, and people actually blanch them by putting a cover over them, so more sunlight would cause them to turn
greener,
more green.
Okay.
I must admit you've stumped me on the what to do over winter.
No idea on that one.
I have no idea on that one, I'm afraid.
I don't either.
I've been told you could leave them out in the garden, they'll come back the next year. And it was like three different plants, and I really like the taste of the, it's not like the store-bought celery. You know, I use when I can pickles and stuff, I put it in there, and it seems to give it a little extra flavor.
What the heck? Leave them out,
yeah,
see what happens.
Maybe put some mulch over them.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you're saying is try and get more sunlight, then they'll stay greener. It seems like the center stalks are green and the outer ones were white.
It's weird.
That's weird. Sometimes things will turn white, though, if they're getting too much sun. If it burnt or scorched?
it was on the east side of the house, and it's like in a planter with brick wall behind it. So I'm wondering, maybe it was too
maybe
much.
Maybe it was too hot.
Reflecting off the brick, yeah. Off the brick wall. That could have been it.
That could have been it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Paul in Appleton, it's your turn now. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I'd like to find out about parsnips. I'd love to eat them, but I don't know a thing about how to get them growing.
Oh, well, you can plant them in the spring. I've heard of people planting them by seed. I'm not sure if you can get them in pieces like in potatoes. I don't think so. But definitely, I know you can plant them from seed, and, you know, you just need a good sunny spot with sufficient sunlight, about 6 hours a day. And because they're root crops, you know, you want to make sure that you have good organic soil that drains well, so that you get a nice long root. And I know of people that mulch them and are still harvesting them into December. In our area down here in Madison, I because the soil freezes earlier up north, I would hate to guess on that one. But I know down here that you can do that. You put some, like, 6 inches or a foot of straw, and that should...
You don't have to wait until after a frost.
No, no, you don't, but they will be sweeter if you wait until after frost.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's the ones I like the best.
Yeah, well, leave them in.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Ray emailed us, and she's wondering, what should I do to have a successful winter of my rosemary in the house? I have taken the plant out of my herb garden and put it into a large plastic pot. Now what do I do?
Okay, well, rosemary needs lots of sun, and it is one of the herbs that, while it likes to be drier, it doesn't like to get too dry. Now, one problem I have always had inside is that the darn things get powdery mildew. And so you want to make sure that you put it someplace where you get good air circulation. If you are still using the soil out of the garden that you planted it in outside, what you might want to do is take it out of that soil, wash the soil off of the roots, and put it into more of a houseplant type of soil. I don't know about you, but my garden soil is fairly clay, and it will turn into a brick inside in a pot. Most plants don't like growing in bricks, so you might want to try that as well.
Brian in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Brian.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I have a problem. A little over 3 years ago, I had bought a hydrangea, and the strain that it was when I got it said that it would only bloom on old wood. And the first year, there were no blooms, but it grew well. Now, the last 2 years, the flower buds develop, but very few of them actually ever bloom. So it's kind of an odd-looking plant, and I'm wondering if you could suggest why it's not coming to fruition.
Would too much fertilizer be an issue there, Lisa?
It could be. If you had a high nitrogen fertilizer, you'd get wonderful leaf growth, but not so good with the flowers. It's really hard for those of us in Wisconsin. Now, in Milwaukee, you're lucky because it's a little warmer here than it is in the Madison area. I always have to cover and mulch the hydrangeas that are supposed to bloom on old wood. That would include even the ones that they say all summer. I'm probably mangling the name here, but all summer beauty. I'm trying to remember the popular one that I have that comes in a, you know, colored pot and so on. A lot of the ones that are blue are hydrangea macrophylla, and those are really, while the plant is hardy, the flower buds are not always hardy. And so sometimes you will not get good blooms. That could be the problem with your smaller types of flowers.
I think it's endless summer hydrangea.
Endless summer. Thank you. Good heavens. I couldn't remember that for anything. With the endless summer, it's supposed to bloom on both new wood and old wood, but I think it tends to bloom more on old wood than on new wood. But anyway, what I would do is this winter, I would cover it, with a pot or a rose cone, put some straw on the inside so that it's well insulated against the cold, and then try it again next year. And if you have been using a heavy nitrogen fertilizer, stop that.
Quit it. Thanks a lot for calling. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, our guest here on Garden Talk. Lisa Johnson, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, and Dave in Dubuque, Iowa is up next with a question. Dave, hello to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, I listened earlier about the gentleman with the pumpkin seeds.
Yeah.
Does that also go for tomato seeds?
Tomatoes are more self-pollinated, but you probably will get some variation.
The reason I ask, a friend of mine keeps giving me tomato plants that he grows from seed after seed after, and the plants get less and less tomatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're probably not really what you want.
Well, yeah, that he keeps giving me. I don't want to say I don't want them anymore.
Well, that's true. I understand your dilemma there.
Yeah, but the tomatoes seem different shape than the original.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Very. A lot less, too.
Genetic variability, yep.
So I just tell them, don't give them to me anymore?
I would say that.
Diplomatically.
Yeah, or if you can't say it, I would accept them and...
Oh, dear, they died.
Yeah, maybe I'll give them a brochure on them or something.
All right, Dave, thanks for calling. Don in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Don.
Hi, good morning. I was hoping you might be able to give me some advice on a couple of varieties of trees that might be quick growing with about a 30-foot height and a 10 to 20-foot spread, and if they have something interesting going for them, even better.
Okay. What kind of site are these going to be in? What kind of soil, light?
They'll be in some good soil, and they'll be on a slight bank where it drains pretty well.
And it gets full sun, or?
It gets I'd say full sun.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'd recommend a service berry. There are a number of different kinds out there on the market. They are native to this area in North America as well, and, kind of east. You don't want to get any of the dwarfs like Prince William or Regent Service Berry, but Princess Diana would be good. There is, just a number of... Autumn Blaze, number of different species and cultivars out there. And they have great fall color. They have white flowers in April. They're one of the earlier trees to bloom. They get fruits that are dark blue in usually June. Now, typically the birds will get them before you do, but if you're interested in attracting birds, that's a great plant. Even the bark is...
I could eat them too, though, you said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you can get them, they're sweeter than blueberries. Even the bark looks nice, and it's got a nice form during the winter. You can get the multiple stem or single stem. You might want to try something. Let's see. I forgot where you're from again.
Madison.
Madison. Okay. You could try, pagoda dogwood isn't going to get that tall. It'll get that wide, possibly, but that's another potential.
I like the service berry idea.
Yeah, I think service berry would be good. I was just trying to give them a couple options. If you're interested, some of the calorie pears, ornamental pears, have gorgeous fall color. They have flowers, although the flowers are not all that sweet smelling. Certainly an ornamental crab, Purple Prince.
What was that one?
Purple Prince. Yeah, that's one of the new ones. Prairie Fire is an oldie but a goodie. Bright pink flowers on that one and red fruits. We have a great publication at our fact sheet site on ornamental crab apples. That's the Garden Facts series. And You can get that at our urban horticulture site. I don't have that one memorized. It's University of Wisconsin Extension Urban Horticulture.
Yeah.
That, if you Google that, that should probably bring it up for you.
Okay.
So there's a few.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And what about those leftover seeds from the vegetable garden? In 30 seconds, how do you overwinter them?
Well, not all of the seeds that we've been talking about are good to overwinter, but you want to make sure that they're kept dry and cool.
Dry and cool. That's the main thing. Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator on Garden Talk, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Lots of callers online, but I think we have one open line for you with your question at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call or shoot us an email at talk@wpr.org, and we'll see what we can do to answer your questions. And we have Alloway, I believe, with a question. Hi, thank you for calling.
I need to trim several bushes, shrubs, small trees. Is there a rule of thumb when it's too late in the season to do this?
Well, you need to know what you're trimming, actually. For spring blooming shrubs, you want to prune them right after they have bloomed in the spring. So things like lilacs, what else blooms in the spring? Crab apple trees you want to do during dormant season. For flowers that appear in summer, like spirea, you can prune those in the spring because those mostly bloom on new wood. So you could wait until March with those. For most things, though, you want to wait until they're dormant. You can still do the lilac when it's dormant, but just be aware that because it flowers on old wood, that you would be cutting off some of the flowers for next year.
Okay.
So we do have at our Garden Facts, that's the WIHORT site, the Urban Horticulture site, we do have some nice Garden Facts sheets on pruning shrubs, pruning evergreens, and pruning deciduous trees. So that'll give you the names of the shrubs and when to prune them, and it even tells you a little bit about what technique to use, whether you should use thinning or rejuvenation, how much you can cut them, as there are some plants like the spirea that you can cut them down fairly brutally. Potentilla is another one that you can do that to. But most things will not tolerate being cut down to 6 inches.
And,
do you have any idea what some of your plants are?
No, I'm not familiar with varieties. But as far as evergreens, these small shrubs, very low evergreens, is it okay to do those in the fall?
No, you want to prune those in the spring after the first flush of growth, and then you also prune them later in the summer when there's a second flush of growth. You don't have to do it that second time if you don't want to. Now, low-growing evergreens, they might be junipers. In general, we don't prune junipers too much. If it's an arborvitae of some kind, you want to be sure you can shear it, but don't shear it past the green zone.
Right.
So the pruning techniques are really based on the type of plant. And what you could do is, if you're not sure what it is, take some digital pictures and email those to your extension office. Or if you're here in Dane County, you can email them to me. And I'll see if I can tell you what they are and when you need to do what.
I'll do that. But a general rule of thumb is maybe not too many plants want to be trimmed in the fall?
No, not too many in the fall.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Josh emailed us from Madison, lives in an apartment with 3 5-foot-long flower boxes.
Wow.
And wonders what he could plant there for next summer, or, you know, for next year, sometime in the spring. And he says they have to be hardy. He's not a very green thumb kind of a guy.
Okay, so he's got 5-foot flower boxes.
Three of them.
Does he say what kind of sun it gets?
He does not say what kind of sun it gets, so it's...
Okay, if it gets a lot of sun, I'd recommend something like moss roses. Now, they do have the, well, the double-flowered ones don't close up quite so much like the single-flowered ones do, but you do need a fair amount of sun for moss roses. But there, if you forget to water them, they'll be okay for a period of time. You might also, if you think you can put a little bit more effort into them, you can use some smaller things like lobelias. Now, they're going to need sun, but they also need to be kept fairly moist. If it's in a shady spot, you're still going to need to water, but you might want to try some impatiens. Boy, there are all kinds of different
plants
available out there. I could go on and on and on, but I kind of need to.
There's some good ideas there. All right. And Jeff says more than half my jalapeno peppers always go from green to black to red and have for many years. Doesn't seem to affect the taste. I think it has something to do with the variety, since my other peppers don't do it.
That very well, yeah.
That's probably the variety.
Yeah.
Let's go to Michael in Fort Atkinson. Hi.
Hello, Larry and Lisa. I had a question about some knockout roses.
Okay.
And I was wondering, I planted a row of them, and I was wondering, should I mulch them for winter?
Yeah, I would do that. Now, knockout typically will die back to the ground for winter, at least the first year. Where are you at again?
Fort Atkinson.
Fort Atkinson, okay. So you're in Zone 4, and generally in Zone 4, you're going to find that there's a lot of dieback, but they come back from the roots.
Okay.
So what I would do is put some bark mulch around the base, make it 4 inches thick or so, and you can cut them back a little bit right now, but you might have some growth that will stay on over the winter, and of course if you do, you want to keep that going till next spring, so don't prune them back. Even though they usually die back, don't prune them back too much. I've had really good luck with some of my knockouts with just doing, you know, that kind of minimal effort in the fall, and then in the spring, if I've mulched them properly, they do seem to come back quite nicely.
Okay.
Knockouts are a great plant.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, they're really beautiful. I was happy with them.
Yeah, and very little disease problem. I wish they had a fragrance, but they don't.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
Yeah, that's the only thing. And, of course, the Japanese beetles will get after them, but I think less so than some of the more fragrant roses.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Well, I thank you ever so much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Tony in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Tony.
We're big listeners over here in Fort Atkinson.
Yeah.
The entire city has it turned on right now. We put it over the loudspeakers in town. What a great show. Hey, two questions. The first and most important, how do I prepare my hops for overwintering? I've got Centennials and Cascades. I want to be sure they come back up. This was their first year. They seem to do really well, went up to about 20, 25 feet.
Yeah, they're
quite... Seem to have good roots underneath, and what do I do to keep them going?
They're quite vigorous plants. My neighbor has some that they were cutting back by the baleful. I think that if you just mulch them, that they should be more than okay.
And how close to the ground do I cut them back?
I would say about 8 inches.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Should...
And then my Brussels sprouts, they're in a race against time right now. And how long can I leave them in?
Well, once we start getting temperatures into the low 20s, we start to see some problems. We did harvest ours at the teaching garden last Saturday. Yeah, when it was 60 degrees, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, we've got October and November, which is only fair since we got November and October, but
right.
Who knows what month we're going to get next. But anyway, with the night temperatures getting much cooler, I would harvest them fairly soon.
Okay. All right. Hey, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for calling, Tony. Appreciate it.
You know, Brussels sprouts are some of the coal crops that tend to get sweeter after a frost. The chard, the spinach, the Brussels sprouts, etc. Really nice to let them wait for a couple of frosts, but if we get a really hard freeze, a little too late.
Let's go to Tracy in Lake Mills. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. Hey, great program. I mean, just terrific.
Thank you.
Happened to catch it, and what a great thing. I did have a couple questions. One, I'm trying to get a kind of a native sugar maple forest, so to speak, to grow in my front yard, which is now pretty much just lawn. So I've been going in the backwoods behind my house and digging up these sugar maples that are about, 6 to 12, even 15 feet high, mostly little ones. There seems to be a zillion of them back there. And I dig them up. It's backbreaking work, as you can imagine. But I've had, some success. I've gotten about 15 of them moved so far. I figure I need to get about 60 of them because I'd really like to just decommission huge parts of the lawn and just have a forest. But my question was, when is the proper time of year to be doing that sort of thing?
You should do that in the spring.
In the spring,
mm-hmm.
Okay, before they bud out, okay. All right, good. I mean, I've done some in the fall, and I've did some early spring. It didn't seem to matter, but I'll stick with that.
How close together are you planting these?
Well, I'm real close in some cases. I'm kind of mimicking the way I see it back in the backwoods, and in some cases, sometimes there's two of them just knotted together, sometimes they're a few feet apart. And I'm trying to kind of replicate that natural woods kind of look, where they just grow, in a huge thicket. And I figure I'd let the chips fall as they may, in the future. That was the idea there.
Okay. Okay. But you're not putting them too close to the house.
No, not too close to the house.
That's
kind of keeping that away and just, trying to, my goal is to just kind of go back to a, to get some color in the fall and,
mm-hmm.
and to just have, a thicket of, maple trees the way I kind of see it in the woods sometimes.
Sure, and then you can put some native wildflowers under there too. And
yes, and then that's the goal, the idea there. And one last quick question there. I do have some flower gardens going on. I've made some rock border areas and planted a bunch of flowers and that sort of thing. And during periods of drought when we don't have any rain, I put in a drip system, and I've got that kind of ran all over the place. But my concern is that my water source, which is the well, is just horrible with iron. Is that not a good thing, I suppose?
Well, it can gunk up your hose, but the plants shouldn't have too much of a problem with it.
Really, that's my concern. Is I literally had sometimes been watering them from 4 to 5 weeks, during dry periods,
mm-hmm.
and I'm worried that the iron is killing the trees and flowers. I mean,
no.
That's nothing to worry about. Really?
I wouldn't worry about. You may get, if you were sprinkling overhead, you might get a film on them that maybe isn't so great. But if you're just using drip irrigation, that should be okay. But you may have to clean your equipment more often.
It does look clogged up and everything. But as far as, it affecting the roots of the tree or, chemical react, no problem there. They can take a higher iron content without killing them. Oh, interesting. Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Now, thanks a lot for calling. Catherine emailed us. Remember, we had a question about rosemary plants,
yes.
growing them indoors, and the issue was watering and how Catherine deals with it. She has them in a planter. It consists of two pots, one inside the other. The inner pot is porous but has no drainage hole and fits fairly snugly inside the glazed outer pot.
Hmm.
And the outer pot she fills with water. And the water is absorbed through the porous inner pot, and that keeps the rosemary evenly watered.
That's interesting.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
you need a porous pot.
Yeah, I mean, usually we say, you must have drainage. In order that you keep some kind of oxygen content in the soil. What I always say is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Working,
if it's working for you,
why not give it a try?
Right.
Absolutely. And Claudia wonders, should I do anything with my perennials? Cut them down, leave them alone? I sort of like the looks of them hanging around all winter and think maybe the birds might like them as cover. What do you do with your perennials?
Well, it depends. For the hostas, for example, I usually try and cut those down, particularly if I'm worried about slugs. For chrysanthemums, I leave at least a foot of foliage. Asters, I cut back because usually they've got some kind of foliar disease by that time of year, and I don't want that material hanging around to haunt me again next year. So, if you know, if they had powdery mildew or they had leaf spots or any other kind of foliar disease, usually cutting them down is good. I like to leave the astilbe old flowers up because they're kind of attractive during the winter. Some of the grasses I leave up, some of them I cut. It really is, some of it is personal preference. If you waited with everything until spring, it probably would be fine. It's just that usually during the spring I have so much going on that I need to make sure that I do some of my maintenance during the fall. A book I'd like to recommend is The Well-Tended Perennial Garden by Tracy D. Oh, dear, no. DiBato, is that right? She's got a hyphenated last name, and it's like DiBato Oust, the after the hyphen, A-U-S-T. Maybe we can look that one up, The Well-Tended Perennial Garden. But she is a prolific author. She has a few books out there, and I believe she's in Ohio, and she does a lot of perennial maintenance, and she has some wonderful charts in this book that tell you by species what to do. And she's also called the Deadhead Queen, which doesn't mean she's a Grateful Dead fan, but means that she is somebody that very vigilant about when the flowers on your perennials die back, removing those flowers, and also if the plants start to get leggy during the year, that you take care of pruning those too so that they always look nice.
We will. I'm checking here, and there's someone else with that exact same title of that of a book. So we'll find out. I'll find out here in just a minute. In the meantime, let's go to Tom in Madison. Tom, hello to you.
Hello. I wanted to talk about wild blackcaps, raspberries.
Ah.
We had transplanted some after they actually started to fruit this year in our yard in full sun. Did very well this year and sent up a number of new shoots. And I wanted to find out if I should cut those back before winter or just leave them the way they are. They're a little bit growing over the sidewalk and so forth, but I do realize that first year shoots not going to bear any fruit. And
yeah,
second year they will, and so
forth. The primacanes and the floracanes. The floracanes can certainly be cut back because they're not going to bloom again, and they're the ones that you picked the berries off of, as you were saying.
Oh.
And generally for the primacanes, you do want to thin those somewhat. And usually, I think it's about 4 per linear foot that you can have before they start to get too crowded. So you can do that. You can do that in the winter, and you can even what they usually recommend is that you do your thinning, you cut back your the old floracanes to the ground, and then with the primacanes, after you've thinned them, you cut 25% off the top so that they will branch better.
Oh, I see. Well, great. Thank you very much.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And we've got another great publication on that website that isn't up. The Learning Store has got a really nice publication on growing raspberries, and it gives illustrations on pruning and everything.
Okay. And Pete in Sheboygan, your turn. Hi, Pete.
Good morning. A couple of questions here regarding, can you give me some advice on sprouting acorns? And then once they have sprouted, how do I keep the squirrels from devouring them?
That's a good one. Okay, acorns, it's really hard to get acorns that don't already have worms in them. What you do after you collect them is you float them in a bucket of water, And the ones that float, I believe, are the ones that have probably been eaten out by the worm.
Okay.
Check that, though, and you know, see if there is indeed a worm inside. If not, then I'm wrong, and it's the ones that sink that you're you're supposed to get rid of. I think it's the sinking ones, though, that you save. And these, again, are going to need a cold period. They suggest that you plant them about, you know, a couple inches down. You know, squirrels can plant oak trees quite nicely yeah. with acorns. So you don't need to plant them too deep, 2-3 inches down. And what you should do when they come up is you'll probably need to protect them with either hardware cloth or chicken wire.
Okay. How long do they have to be protected? Is there a point when the squirrels are going to lose interest?
Well, the squirrels, it's actually more the rabbits that I would worry about with young material, or even deer if you have deer problems. Usually once they're, you know, once they have a diameter that's greater than half inch or so, they become a lot less attractive. And there are various tree protectors that you can get that are plastic and have holes in them that you can put around the trees when they're very young like that, too, to discourage buck rub and other things that can happen. But I wouldn't use tree wrap for protecting them against varmints. It's too easy to forget that and leave it on and end up with it girdling the tree.
All right.
Okay, one last question. Is it possible to sprout the acorn, to freeze them, and how long should I freeze them, and then sprout them indoors?
You could potentially do that. You know, there's a great book by Michael Durr that's all about propagation of woody plants, and he gives some very specific instructions as to how to do that by species. So, you know, if you wanted to propagate a viburnum or a dogwood or an oak, he'll tell you how to do it with cuttings, tell you how to do it with fruits, and so on. I would imagine with the oaks, I know that they need a cold period. Generally, the cold periods are something like a couple of months. I don't usually freeze them, but I usually put them in a refrigerator would be the way to go. Mm-hmm. Keep them as cold as possible. And usually you'll put them in some moist sand or something like that to kind of mimic the outdoors.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Lisa, here in the last few seconds here, the well-tended perennial garden.
Ah.
And the author is?
DiSabato Oust, right?
Yeah.
Tracy, D-I capital S-A-B-A-T-O hyphen Oust, A-U-S-T, right?
There you have it.
Okay. It's a great book.
Lisa, thank you so much. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
I certainly will.
Thank you so much. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest here on Garden Talk. She'll be back and we will talk with her once again. Just taking a look ahead to Monday, we'll be dealing with aches and pains, physical therapy with Assistant Professor Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Stay with us. Lots in store.